Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Novice Hunter Podcast. In this podcast, I find experienced hunters who are willing to offer tips and advice to beginner hunters, such as myself, on how to be more successful in the field. All right, everyone. Episode 22 this week. We have a very special guest. His name is Jacob Coons. Jacob Coons is from back east, and he currently lives in Kentucky. But we talk about his hunt that he did this past fall in Montana. It was his first elk hunt, and it took years of preparation. And we talk about it here in the episode. He really does his homework on elk habitat, where to find good locations to hunt. You know, he knows about thermals and how important the wind is. So much so that he put all of his information and all of his homework into a packaged online course. He offers it on udemy.com, and it's actually called 12 Months to Elk Hunting. He starts, you know, if you're planning a year in advance, he took actually 2 to 3 years to plan for his elk hunt. But he condenses it into, if you want to start, you know, I want to go elk hunting this fall, you can start this course at any time. And he gives you very detailed information, you know, about each western state, harvest statistics. He also gives what type of tags to put in for, different options as far as weapons. And we've come together with Built for the Hunt as well to make a giveaway. This giveaway is going to be for any one of my listeners on either on the podcast or on Instagram. What we're going to do is we're going to make it a little different than what you see on Instagram or you see on Facebook, where you just tag all your friends. This is going to be a little bit more, fun, I would say. What we're going to do is I want to know your funny hunting story that you have. And you can send your story in to thenovicehunter@gmail.com and title it funny hunting story with your name or your Instagram tag, whatever you'd like. And what we're going to do, I'm going to have Jacob, myself, and also my co-host Aaron, we're all going to review your stories. We're going to come up with the funniest story. Whoever has the best story, there's only going to be one giveaway here. One grand prize giveaway. That giveaway will include lifetime access to Jacob Coons's online course for elk, whitetail, and turkey. It's also going to include a shirt from Built for the Hunt. Also a dehydrated meal from Built for the Hunt, and a workout plan from Built for the Hunt. And I'm going to throw in a sheath knife. So I haven't done the math yet, but I think it's around $160 worth of worth of prizes. So just to give you an idea, Jacob's online course is $30 for each course. You're going to get all three of them for free. You're going to get a shirt worth $26. You're going to get a workout plan that's valued anywhere from $39 to $100, depending on which one we decide to give away. A dehydrated meal, which is worth, I think it's worth $19.99. And then the sheath knife is worth $19.99. So I could go through and add all that up. I will in an Instagram post. So it's a great giveaway. So I'm going to post it on Instagram. Share it, like it, and send me an email. Again, that's thenovicehunter@gmail.com. And we'll have three of us review each story, and we'll come up with the best story. This giveaway will start January 23rd, and it'll end March 15th of 2019. So it's a good, what are we at? That's almost 6 weeks-ish. So plenty of time for you to type up a story, send it to thenovicehunter@gmail.com, and we are going to review every single story. Remember, it has to be a funny story. If you have not been hunting, because I know some of my audience does not hunt or has not hunted, you can send me a funny story, maybe with practicing archery or practicing practicing shooting. I just want to hear some funny stories from anyone. Again, the winner of the giveaway will be announced March 15th, 2019. So I'm going to make an Instagram post, like it, share it, and submit an email to me. All right, everyone, Jacob and I talk for quite a while, and he gives some great advice to new hunters. He gives some great advice for someone who is maybe coming from the East Coast or the Midwest and coming out west for their first hunt. So he gives some great tips there, and I really hope you guys enjoy this episode. Remember to subscribe to this podcast. Give me a rating. I want to reach more people. Also, if you want to support the podcast, you can actually sign up for, if you want to give me a monthly donation of any dollar value you'd like. You can help me pay for possibly a new microphone or, maybe do more giveaways. You can go to the bio of the podcast and go, and there's a hyperlink that says support. Click on that. And I really appreciate it, guys. All right, everyone. Jacob and I talk about elk, and so it's fantastic. I hope you enjoy. Hello, Jacob.
Jeff, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing great. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you just fine.
Fantastic.
Welcome, everyone, to the Novice Hunter Podcast. We have a special guest, teacher of all things hunting. We have Mr. Jacob McCoons. Did I say that right?
Well, the M is my middle initial, so it's Jacob M. Coons. So,
all right.
We're close enough. It's all good.
I guess that's just how it shows up on your Instagram, so that's why I screwed it up.
Yeah, right, you know what? I joined Instagram a long time ago and just sort of default set that up as my middle initial, Jacob M. Coons, but no worries at all.
Okay, great. All right, well, go ahead and give us a quick introduction of yourself. Where you from, where you live, maybe a little bit about your hunting background. But yeah, we'll just turn the time over to you real quick.
You know, first of all, Jeff, I really appreciate you having me. I really do enjoy your podcast. And, to give you a little bit of background, I live in Louisville, Kentucky, sort of born and raised in this area, although I bounced around quite a bit for a number of years and moved back here about 3 years ago. But I grew up hunting with my dad, squirrel hunting, fishing, all of that. And quite honestly, I remember a lot of days being in school knowing that my dad was out hunting and just dying hoping that I could be out there with him. And then when I would get home, hoping that something would be in the back of his truck. But, you know, honestly, when I got into high school and definitely into college, I sort of fell out of hunting and got into, you know, getting a job and getting a degree and trying to work up the corporate ladder and that sort of thing. And I've also bounced around a little bit in corporate America. I lived in the Northeast a little bit and lived in some other states. And it wasn't until about 7 or 8 years ago that I started getting back into hunting. And so while I have experience and you know, hunting big and small game and all of that, I still feel like very much a novice. And I think even, you know, even as I've continued to get better, it's just, I think there's so much more that, you know, we can learn about the different types of styles of hunting and game and learning more about their habits and tendencies. And so, so in any event, that's a little bit about me and sort of about my, I guess, my hunting background. And we can get more specific as, you know, as we go further in the podcast.
Right. I might have missed it, but I didn't quite hear where you said you were from or where you.
Oh, I'm actually in Louisville, Kentucky.
Okay.
Yeah, I we moved back here about 3 years ago. Before that, I was up in near Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and I got to tell you, it's quite a bit different hunting in the Northeast than it is sort of in the Midwest. The Northeast is especially like the Pennsylvania and New York State; those areas are known for not a whole lot of public land and a lot of relatively high number of at least gun hunters, and right. So it was a you know, definitely a different experience turkey hunting and hunting deer up in that region, and you know, moving back here to Kentucky was so different because there's I don't know if there's not a whole lot of, there's not necessarily a lot of public land, but there's, you know, there's less, it's less of a population hub, so there's less hunters. And there tends to be a little bit more opportunity and quite a bit more game.
Right. So in Kentucky, well, let's compare in, like you said, in northeastern United States, is it, I've talked to other people that lived in Pennsylvania, and they said there's also a lot of bear and there's a lot of deer. Is that what you came across while hunting up there?
Yeah, you know, it's... there's smaller tracks. There seem to be a lot of small tracks of land, of a couple acres here, a couple acres there. And, you know, if you were really persistent, you can go door to door and get to hunt, you know, a couple acres that back up to each other. And so there's a lot of deer for sure. You know, as it relates to, the bear, what's interesting is, 1 year I was, bow hunting on the ground on a piece of public land. And, I heard a stick break and I thought, well, that's definitely not a squirrel. And I thought it would, you know, I was getting ready to, you know, put an arrow in a white-tailed deer. And right. It's actually a black bear mom with her two cubs. And
oh, no.
Yeah, and so the wind was going from my right to left, and she was down below me about 45, maybe 50 yards, and she didn't know I was there, and I had never encountered a bear, you know, on the ground before. And it was a pretty scary experience because now I know, at the time I didn't know, but black bears aren't really aggressive. They're not necessarily ones that are, going to go after the human. And, that being said, she was with her cubs and I felt like if I startled her, she may, you know, decide to be aggressive to protect her cubs. And so she actually worked her way a little bit past me. And I thought, okay, this is great. She's gone now. But then they started to circle back towards me.
Oh, no.
And I, you know, I just, I finally, I stood up and just made as much noise, breaking sticks, crashing through the woods with an arrow knocked. And then I called my wife, and what's interesting, Jeff, is she was with some friends of hers, and they were going somewhere to some party or gathering or something, and she was telling her friends and laughing about it. and I was
no way.
Yeah, and so, like, she was telling her friends, and I was like, honey, I just want you to stay on the phone because I want to talk to somebody while I'm working my way back to the car. And if something does happen, I want you to know. And so I was like, I was really frustrated. So I immediately called my dad, and he talked me through the situation, and I made it back to my car and all that stuff. So, you know, yeah, I didn't, you know, bears definitely inhabit, you know, the Northeast, black bears. And I've never actually hunted, bear. We have them here in Kentucky and in different, you know, eastern and I think western parts of Kentucky, not here in the area that I'm at, but it's definitely, you know, something I've considered. But yeah, there was definitely a lot of whitetails, definitely a lot of bear. I got bear on my trail cameras from time to time, and at first didn't know what I quickly, you know, you go through your trail camera pictures and you just sort of burn through them. And then I went back and I was like, what is this dark shape? And then I finally figured out it was, you know, a bear checking out my camera. But, which, you know, again, I told my wife, I was like, bears belong in zoos. What are they doing in the woods? This is crazy. So, but, yeah, so it was quite the experience. Had a lot of fun out there hunting turkey and deer, but, you know, a different experience because, you know, certainly I think you're in a western state, and I don't know what your bear experience is out there, but here in Kentucky, you know, I pretty much can go into the woods and not, you know, I can slip through in the dark and not worry about, you know, encountering something that, you know, that could potentially attack me or what have you.
Right. In my short time spending in the woods, I've never seen a bear in the wild. In September, when I went archery hunting with my friend Aaron, before I got there, he was exploring one part of the area that was actually a really pretty area. And, he encountered a black bear and her two cubs, and he got within about, and he actually had a bear tag. So he was actually going to knock an arrow and take a chance at her. But, cause she was mature, or actually her cubs were pretty mature as well. And, but he never got close enough, and then they got winded and they started running away. Fortunately, they ran the other way and not at him. But yeah, in my experience in the woods, I've never encountered a bear. I'm sure I will eventually. I just don't know when.
Yeah. I mean, we went, out to my dad and my brother and I went to Montana this year to hunt elk, and it was an incredible trip. I highly recommend it to everyone that's listening. It was our first experience of that kind, and we specifically sought out grizzly bear country because we knew that there would be less hunting pressure.
Right.
And so, you know, we really had to take a lot of precautions. We wanted to make sure that we didn't have food near our camp. We didn't eat near our camp, and we hung everything up in a tree roughly 200 yards away from our camp. And, you know, I mean, you hear about it every, you know, September, October, about a number of grizzly bear attacks, and it certainly happened this year. And I know a guide and a hunter, I know the guide was killed and I think this was in Wyoming, and the hunter, I think, escaped, but they were recovering an elk that the hunter had shot, and these two bears had not claimed the elk, but I guess had been in the area and scented, you know, the kill, and you know, it's really tragic. I mean, this was a young guy in his 30s who was a professional guide that got killed.
And, right. Yeah, I heard that story.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, you know, black bears, you know, different. They're all together. They're like we mentioned. They're not nearly as aggressive or interested in messing with humans, but grizzly bears have no problem at all, and they're, you know, they're real life monsters if you think about it, in the sense of, you know, they could take care of you pretty quickly if you run into one.
Oh yeah, I mean, they're beautiful animals, and my friend and I, Aaron, we actually have a podcast episode of them. We talk briefly about grizzly bears because of the recent legislation that passed. There was going to be a hunt here in Idaho for one male grizzly bear, and then Wyoming was going to host a hunt as well, but it never happened. Federal government, I don't remember if it was the Supreme Court or something, but they ruled against it, so that hunt didn't happen. But it's interesting to hear the story of bears. They're just incredible animals, and I'd love to see them from a distance, and that's probably it.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, Jeff, I think you bring up a really good point, though, is that, you know, some of the push and pull as it relates to what's happening in, you know, in Western states, whether it's around hunting bears or whether it's, you know, public land, and the fact remains, and we hear about it constantly, is that the number of people that engage in hunting here in the United States, that number continues to decline. And and the problem with that, I mean, I think you and I both agree, I was talking about hunting in Pennsylvania, and the number of hunters, the sheer number, you know, I wasn't crazy about that. But that being said, if eventually I start going out to these, the more I go out and hunt and the less people that are hunting, the less voice we have as outdoorsmen and conservationists around some of these types of issues. And so that's one of the reasons why I really appreciate, you know, the podcast that you have, because you can help folks that are, you know, interested in hunting or just really beginning to get interested in, or novice to the point that, you know, the more voices we have as hunters and outdoorsmen and that really understand the importance of wild places and wild things, the more our voice will be heard. And, you know, whether it's about grizzly hunting or the protection of public land or opening up access to public lands. And so, you know, those things are really important, not only for you and I, but also our children and grandchildren and so forth.
I completely agree, and I appreciate that. I appreciate the support. I mean, this podcast is, you know, I don't have a very large audience at all, but the people that I do reach, it's been very rewarding to hear either their hunting stories, that they're either new hunters or they were hunting a couple times when they were younger, but now they're later in age and they really want to get back into it. And it's that type of, I guess, those type of, I guess that's the audience I'm looking for. And that's the audience that really needs to also share their voices. Like what you're doing right now with this, one way you're doing it is through teaching people an online course. And so I think it's extremely important that there is a voice, for, hunting and outdoors in general. And to be, to start this journey, I guess you could call it, has been extremely fun and extremely rewarding. And I just hope that the voice that I have, it echoes in the ears that need to hear it. You know what I mean?
No, I hear you, and I'm right there with you. And you mentioned, the courses, and so yeah, I mentioned that I went out west, and during the course of that, for 2 years planning that trip out west, I found that there's a lot of great information out there, but it's not really packaged in such a way that I felt was very necessarily efficient or effective. And there are some other types of courses out there for elk hunting and that sort of thing. But those courses are designed by folks that live in the Western states. No offense, but I live east of the Mississippi, and so I needed, I was trying to collect information for someone that's, a flatlander for the most part. And
right.
So, as I started to piece this all together, I after coming out of it on the other side, I wanted to put it all to help others that are east of the Mississippi or maybe have hunted elk. And that's why I created the 12 Months to Elk course on Udemy, because I wanted to help someone understand that, or at least help one plan and prepare for that experience, but not actually be able to put boots on the ground. And, let's face it, I wasn't, my dad, my brother and I, we weren't able to go out to Montana before our trip. So how do you do that and make the most of your 5 days, 7 days, 10 days out there? Because that's what it's going to be. And, for us that, we finally get some vacation time, we save up the money, we go out there. And the last thing you want to do is drive around and try to figure things out and learn things. You have to hit the ground running. And so, with that course, after I completed that course, I thought, there's a whole bunch of people that are really just, I've actually a friend of mine who grew up in, born and raised in Manhattan City or Manhattan, New York, I guess. And he, moved out to the suburbs a couple of years ago and started to, he got a house and bought a lawnmower and all these things. And he and I were talking, and it was like, he really missed the city life. It's all he'd ever known, but he was starting to express some interest in hunting. He didn't know where to start. He didn't understand the seasons. He didn't understand the equipment. He didn't understand the patterns of deer. Where would you shoot one? I mean, sometimes you see these images of a scope pointed at a deer and it's aiming at its head, and I'm like, okay, well, that clearly wasn't designed by someone that is hunting, that's a real hunter. And so that's what led me to create some of the other courses I did, the Whitetail Hunting 101 and Turkey Hunting 101, because I'm like, how can I help someone that grows up in that environment or in Chicago or LA or even in the middle of Iowa, to help them have a foundation for this stuff and then branch out through, learn more through podcasts or YouTube or just Googling things. So, I'm hoping that some of my courses can help build a bridge in much the same way that your podcast is building bridges for folks that really want to dip their toe in something that maybe they've never done before.
Right. I think it's a great idea. I guess to compare like what I've learned, like you said, it's mainly from YouTube, and a lot of it's from either YouTube or from stuff on Instagram, but to have a package like this where I can press play and I can really study each, you know, I've looked through this first lesson and you go from draw odds. You talk about what state you're looking for, which state needs, and each state needs certain, it's either a lottery or it has points or it has, I can't remember the other one you used. Use an example that said if someone has 4 points, someone has another 5 points, person with 5 gets a tag. I can't remember what you said, but.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like preference points versus.
That's what it is, yeah.
Bonus points.
Right.
Should you get a down, you know, down versus synthetics, merino versus synthetics? Where do you camp when you're. If you're bivy hunting, what is bivy hunting?
Exactly.
You know, all of these, you know, how do you, you know, how much of a cooler do you need? How much ice do you need? I mean, it seems like, but it's a lot of logistics, at least, you know, when it comes to the elk course, it's a lot of logistics. And it's like, well, you know, if I want to hunt an elk, if I want to hunt elk in a western state, and again, this is coming from someone east of the Mississippi, you know, what are the states that I can do that in very quickly? And unfortunately, New Mexico and Arizona are not those states based on their draw systems. You have to, you know, New Mexico is a random draw every year, which is great because it doesn't necessarily put me at a disadvantage, but it doesn't ensure that I, okay, in September of next year I'll be elk hunting, you know,
right?
Mm-hmm. And so I could put in for that, but I mean, it could not get drawn, and you know, what are my other options? And so, you know, Arizona, a very difficult draw. You do need to, you know, build up points. In fact, I just put in for bonus points for my two young children today through the Arizona draw. That is, you know, that is active currently. And, you know, you have to buy a license to actually get a bonus point. And for kids, that hunting license is, for a youth license, is $5. So that's a no-brainer. I'm all over that. I'll buy that $5 hunting license and hopefully in a couple, you know, in 5, 6, you know, 10 years from now, when they're old enough to elk hunt, they'll have all the points they want to go to Arizona. And you know, there's other things that, you know, Utah, another state, difficult draw. And so, yeah, I try to take the learner through the process of whittling it down to how can, if you want to hunt elk 12 months from now, what are some states that you can really place your bets on and have a high probability of going? And then starting to whittle that, how do you take a state like Montana or Idaho and whittle that down to a specific unit and then to a specific area and examine the terrain? And under and planning your A, B, C, D, E, and F you know, areas that you're gonna go into, and trying to get really granular, so macro to micro, I guess, is how we try to approach it in the course.
Right. It's I think it's great. I think it'll help any hunter, I think. And there's certain things that, you know, in my experience is very limited, as you know. But I think even those maybe who have quite a bit of experience in hunting in general, or even have hunted elk, I mean, there's always something new they can learn. Maybe like what you say is you list many states. I know a lot of people that just hunt in Idaho, but there's opportunity in Colorado, there's opportunity in other states that are general units, and they're open, and they're you don't need to buy a, you don't have to put in for a tag, you just have to buy a license really and buy a, you know, general unit tag. So I think that's a great idea to, you know, even advanced hunters.
Yeah, I think, you know, the you know, within the course, it also includes a lot of, you know, packing list, and those are becoming more and more, you know, out there, like what people put in their pack, and you can find a lot of that on YouTube. We also look at, you know, the thermals, how they move up and down based on the time of the day, and elk movement is based on those thermals, and then you know, other things as it relates to elk behavior in terms of, you know, what do they eat? And, you know, we look at specific types of shrubs and grasses and whatnot. So it's, you know, again, it's not, you know, my hope was to help answer a lot of the questions that someone would have. And in a lot of the work is really up to the learner, though. I mean, you really have to use the mapping platforms that are out there. Of course, we all are familiar with Google Earth, but there's a lot of other platforms that that can be helpful. Like CalTopo was one that I used, and Hillmap.com is another one that has some unique features. And so we get into some of that as well, so that when, you know, maybe you've gone out, maybe you've gone elk hunting a couple times and haven't put it all together, this is, these are some ways to really try to analyze a particular area. And, you know, you're really looking for disruption, canopy disruption, whether it's a burn or an avalanche shoot, or maybe it's been, you know, maybe there's been some other form of canopy disruption, because that's where the best food is, and that's where you'll find the cows. And then wherever you find the cows, you'll find the bulls, because that's, you know, in September or October, that's what the bulls are looking for. And so it's really trying to get to that granular level. But then again, you know, there's also you know, a lot of great resources out there that can help you do that as well.
Right. So you said you went this past year, this last season. How was your hunt? How'd it go?
Yeah, you know, it was life changing, honestly, Jeff. And it was, we had planned it for 2 years. My dad and I had gone hunting for pronghorn antelope out in the sort of the northwestern tip of Nebraska, where it butts up against Wyoming and South Dakota. We did that in 2016, and it was archery, and he took his crossbow, I took my Hoyt, and we had a blast, and I had a chance, and I unfortunately wasn't smart enough to close the deal. And then my dad had a chance on a pronghorn, and it was just, he had done everything perfect from a stalking perspective, but as we closed out that trip, my dad had said, we should try going elk hunting. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, Jeff, I was a little like, well, we could, but there's, you know, that's a really tough proposition for, you know, a couple flatlanders, you know?
Right.
I mean, you live in Idaho, you're probably at a higher altitude than I am, and you probably, you know, hike some steeper terrain than I do maybe on a more frequent basis. But, so yeah, we decided at the end of 2016 that we were going to plan an elk hunt for September of 2018. And I got my brother to go. He he hunts a little bit, and we drove literally 25 straight hours from Louisville to the southwestern part of Montana. And the first day we really wanted to I think we left on a Thursday night. We got there on a Friday. We wanted to spend that Friday at that elevation, wherever we were, to let our bodies acclimate. I've heard a lot about altitude sickness and didn't want to have my 60-plus year old dad have, you know, any – I mean, altitude sickness can really affect anybody regardless of age, but – you know, I didn't want to push my dad. I mean, I know a lot of folks, when you go out west, you're like, you drive for 20 plus hours or whatever, and the first thing you want to do is run up that mountain. But so we took our time. We got there on a Friday. We had some trouble, but we finally found a camp. And, you know, the first site, and this is why it's so critical to plan other options, but the first site that we went to, it didn't work. I mean, it was what I had seen on Google Earth, the trailhead, the furthest we could get with my vehicle was like a mile and a half close to the trailhead. And the terrain was incredibly steep. And we didn't realize it until we got out there. I mean, really just too steep for elk to really want to inhabit. And so we got in there a little bit, and we realized that this wasn't going to work. So we went, we drove a couple miles south and sort of looped around the other side of this mountain range, and found some area that was more had more gradual slope. Set up camp, and on day one, we got up early, and we started working up. This, you know, this elevation, and it was an area that was open to grazing for.
Still there, Jacob?
Yeah, can you hear me? Did I lose you?
I don't hear you, Jacob.
Can you hear me, Jeff?
No, I can hear you.
Okay, sorry about that. You know, on the first day of our hunt, we got set up. We started going up this elevation, and it was an area that was grazed by local ranchers' cows, and it was really quite interesting because we got up there pretty high, and we were really amazed that these cows were way up high on this elevation, and we even thought, If there's any grizzlies in the area, surely they'll go after the cows and not us. But it was interesting, Jeff, because we were hunting an area that was had previously been burned by a forest fire, this was a couple years old, this burn, and as I mentioned earlier, that's where your best food is. That's where your new growth is, and it has higher nutrition density. And we actually got into we heard some my brother and I eventually got up to a particular point and bugled, and we heard a bugle back, and we were like, okay, that is success. I mean, we're done. We've done what we've bugled, and something bugled back.
We found one.
Yeah, we couldn't even believe it. And so nothing came of that interaction. I had done a lot of research on elk calling, and nothing came of that particular interaction. We regrouped with my dad, who was taking a break further down the mountain. And as we were taking a break, my dad and I were talking. My brother sort of went back up in that general area, and I started hearing some elk, some cow calls, some cow mews, and I told my dad, I was like, what in the heck is my brother doing? Like, why why is he doing that? I was the only one with the tag, and I was like, if he calls in anything, you know, accidentally, I'm down here. So I go up to where he's at, and I'm like, dude, what are you doing? And he was like, the cows, they're right down here. That's an actual cow. And I was like, oh, okay, okay. So we were in an area that, so the as we went up this this elevation, it was really grassy and open, but off to the sort of to the left and to the right, as it dropped off, it was very dense. It was, you know, lots of trees and whatnot, and so we could hear the cows making their, you know, cow sounds, the cow elk, and but we couldn't see them. And so over the course of that first day out there, I personally ended up seeing some of the elk bedded down in a saddle. And unfortunately, some storms rolled in, and lightning, and you know, all the you know, the lightning and the thunder. We were just like, we're not dealing with this. So we backed down and waited for that to pass. And then when we went back up, all the sort of the bugling and stuff had stopped. We had actually bugled some more with a bull that was really, really close in this saddle. And I mean, again, it was just sort of the hair on your arms and neck stand up when you actually, you know, hear something of that nature respond. And, you know, it's a little bit like the first time you've ever gone turkey hunting and heard a turkey respond to your gobble, except this is, you know, a 900 pound animal that's with, you know, spears coming out of its head. That's screaming, you know, it's screaming back at you, and you're just like, oh my gosh, you know? So that was really day one. And then, day two, my dad said that his body told him to take a break. And so he stayed at camp, and my brother and I went back up that same way. And we got up there earlier than we had the previous day. And we actually ran into those cows. We ran into them. Some of them were up on this grassy area, and they spotted us. And so we sort of tried to back down and skirt around them to the other side so we could get full view of them, and just to see, you know, is there a bull in the mix, and where are they exactly going? And I sort of knew that they'd be trying to get back to that saddle that they had sort of inhabited the previous day. And we actually did skirt around. We lost sight of them. And my brother was at this point taking on the calling duties. My dad had sort of practiced, you know, leading up to this and was the caller. But now my brother was going to be the caller, and he was thrown into this. He was like, wait a minute, I don't know what I'm doing. And I was like, just make a sound. Just give it a shot. And, you know, for everybody that's listening that maybe is thinking about elk hunting, you don't have to be an expert elk caller, because even elk don't sound like elk sometimes, and or at least how you think they would sound. And so, you know, my brother, he used a bugle tube that has sort of a bite piece to it, as opposed to having the reed in your mouth. And he got really good at it. And so we engaged two different bulls at that early in the day. And one was higher up in elevation, one was a little lower. And we just sort of termed them the herd bull that was higher up and the satellite bull that was lower down. And And we decided to try to work the satellite initially, and then that sort of didn't work, and that sort of fell through, and sort of we worked up the mountain a little bit to try to engage the herd bull, and as you probably as you know, Jeff, I think you went you went elk hunting this year as well, is that right?
Yeah, so I've been a couple years. I mean, a couple times before, but this year was probably the year that I've seen the most elk. And actually, this year is the first time I ever heard an elk bugle, and that was really cool.
Yeah, and so you know, and maybe for some of the listeners that might be new to it, when you've got a herd bull and you got a satellite, and you know, if you're trying to engage the satellite, you want that satellite to really come over because of you want to pretend you have a hot cow, or you want to pretend that you're a cow, because that satellite, he's just trying to be friendly. You know, he's trying to get in with the group. He's trying to find a friend. And then, you know, the herd bull, you're trying to get in closer and trying to pretend that you're stealing some of his girlfriends. And so it's a little bit different strategy with both. And we were trying a lot of different strategies, but what we found is that those bulls weren't really budging. And we were sort of the week of September 6th through the 16th. So this was probably September the 8th, I think, or 9th. And so it might have been too early for maybe some of the aggressiveness of, you know, trying to challenge or cut off, but either way, they weren't moving. And so it got hotter in the day, and those elk moved on and got quiet. And so we sort of settled in and took a nap and tried to get into position, hoping that maybe they might circle through the area again. But that, you know, unfortunately that didn't happen. And they we knew that my dad had wanted to relocate camp and maybe go to a different area. We didn't really want to leave elk to find elk, because that's never a good idea. But my dad was really wanting to find something that wasn't nearly as steep and might provide us with some easier access to the same area. So we, on day two of the hunt, we went back down a little bit early, and decided that in the morning we would pull up camp really, really early, set up a new camp, and then hunt the rest of that day, and you know, see what we could make happen. So we moved to a little area, another area, just a few miles away, but still sort of in the same vicinity, and this area fortunately didn't have the cows that you know, crapped everywhere, but so that was nice. But as we started to crest this other mountain, I guess, or ridge, we started hearing bugling that was unprompted, and we thought that they were right over the cusp of this ridge, and so we started bugling, and I was trying to position myself. I was below the crest, and we thought any minute now one of these things is going to pop over. And there was, you know, we could hear several, and then finally we crested it and realized that they weren't there. It was really sort of the acoustics of it. They were on. They were opposite. They were across this drainage, and it was really that same area that my brother and I had hunted the day before, the past 2 days. It was just, we were looking at it from a different angle.
Right.
And so it was really these same elk. And, you know, my dad and my brother were like, well, listen, we're going to, you know, I said, they're not moving. We had sort of done this little thing with them, like bugling and cow calling with them, and they weren't really going to come down to the bottom of the drainage and then come back up. So I said, you know, I'm going to go down to the bottom of the drainage. I'm going to do some calling, and I had a heads up decoy with me of a cow. And right. I thought maybe I could set that up and get one to come into bow range. And, so I worked my way down and I did some of that. And, about every 30 minutes, my dad would, or my brother would bugle just so I could get a feel for where the elk were. And there were about three of them across this, range. And, and so that was really helpful because I could, you know, I wasn't making a lot of sounds. I did some cow calling and hoping that one of them will sort of swoop down and try to, you know, bring me to their harem or whatever. But that never happened. Again, they weren't moving. And so I put everything on my pack and I just thought, you know what? I'm just going to go to them and I'm going to use their willingness to bugle, and they were bugling even without my dad bugling, and I'm going to use that against them. And so the thermals were working sort of left to right and right to left, which was great. So I worked up the crease of this this opposite ridge, and if the thermals were going left to right, I'd be on the right side of the crease, and if they would switch to the left or left to right, I would jump over to that side, trying to triangulate their positioning up on this mountain. And and so it took me about, 3.5-4 hours to just work my way up to get to their level. And I finally, I don't know if this worked or not, Jeff, but I'm going to assume it did a little bit because I had the heads up decoy in my hand, and I just tried to hold it to cover, to cover my movement. Cause I was really working into their bedding area, and I didn't want, if a cow was bedded, I didn't want them to see, movement that really spooked them. And so as I worked up there, I kept, I'd stop and glass. And eventually I made out the back of, a cow. And then I started to look around a little bit more, and I saw a bedded cow and then a bedded bull and then some other cows sort of traversing the opposite side of this crease. And,
so how many elk did you see total? Was it a large herd, small herd?
There were about, I think I saw three or four cows. Some of them walking and grazing, some of them just bedded. And then I saw the bull, and he was about 150 yards from me, but he was opposite of the crease. And, four or five cows, the bull, and then I could hear other bulls up higher. And it was really interesting because it was like a party, I read about how, I've got a herd bull and the herd bull is real protective of his harem. I think it was a big party of cows and bulls at this point. And they were just sort of sounding off. And maybe that had something to do again to the early September timeframe. But, so I eventually, like I said, I got in that area and I was on the other side of this crease. And I thought, if I play my cards right, something could graze this way. Something, because the way they were moving, I thought something could move this way. And I found a real thin trail that clearly was used by, elk or whatever. It was super thin and it was super, super steep country. I mean, my gosh, it was super steep. I mean, it made you sick. You didn't even want to take a step anywhere if it was, up or down. But I found this super Bend Game Trail, and I started to walk, to sort of slip down that trail. And again, I was using their sounds against them. I was finding them. I wasn't, you know, making any cow sounds or bugles. And really, in no time, I look up, and on the same trail as me, 80 yards away, I see a set of antlers raking a tree. Oh. And yeah, and I'm like, oh boy. And so I range him, he's 80, and I'm like, okay, if he gets to this next tree, that's 30 yards. That's a, you know, I'll take that. And in no time, in like literally 3 seconds, it seemed like he was at 30 yards. And so he bugled, and when he bugled, I pulled back, and he had turned his head towards his right, my left, and I launched an arrow at him at the front of his chest. And if this is where preparation is critical for, you know, somebody that, you know, east of the Mississippi that doesn't, you know, never hunted elk or whatever, is that, you know, that frontal shot can be an incredibly effective shot if you know where to aim. You know, a lot of times, you know, here in the Midwest, we hunt whitetails, and you're trying to double lung them. You're trying to hit them from the side. And that's obviously a very effective shot, you know, on any animal, certainly an elk. But I knew if I put an arrow in a particular spot on his chest, that it would not only take out his heart, but, you know, his lungs and potentially liver and everything else. And there's a lot of vascular stuff there in that range, in that area of the neck. And so my first shot, Jeff, I used my 20-yard sight pin. I rushed it. I shot beneath him. And he looked at me, and I knew the gig was up, and I knew I better, I'm not, my movement doesn't, it doesn't matter now. And so I notched it, I pulled back, put the 30 yard on him, and just hammered him, right where I was aiming with the 30 yard sight pin. And Jeff, I mean, it was like a Mike Tyson punch out, a knockout. I mean, he was Spinks or Larry Holmes or whoever else, you know, Tyson is just hammered. And he spun to his right and then fell and then tried to get up and then fell and then just sort of fell down the mountain into this deadfall. And wow. I knocked another arrow, but I didn't need it. I mean, I gave him, you know, a couple minutes, and I was like, okay, he's done. And I went over to where I shot him, and I mean, it was, you know, like the proverbial spray, you know, paint can of someone that took a paintbrush and flung it everywhere.
Right.
And that was it. I mean, I was like, oh my gosh, you know, we did it, you know? So I called my brother, and I had some, you know, and somehow I had cell service, and I knew he had cell service where he was on the other mountain, because we had been up there texting our families and whatnot. And I was like, Ben, I was like, how's it going? And he was like, good, how's it going? And I said, did you hear all that bugling up here? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, well, there's one less bugler up here. And it got real quiet. And he was like, you're kidding me. And I'm like, no. I was like, get ready to do some heavy lifting, because we got a lot of work to do. And so I went back down to the bottom of the drainage. They came down and met me, and then we all three worked our way back up to the bull. And he's a 5x5, and you know, just a giant animal. And my dad,
did you get an estimate of how much he weighed?
You know, that's a really good question. You know, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, he, I mean, I feel like
a big bull,
you know, like 700 or 800, 900. I mean, it, it was some, something like that. I mean, I guess, but
wow.
Yeah, I mean, it was, so, and it really took the three of us. I mean, you know, I know some folks, you know, go solo, and I don't mind doing that so much. But I don't think I would want to do that type of experience solo, because you share, you know, such deep, rich experiences with, you know, in that place in a Western mountain state. You know, it's not something that I would want to do. And so my dad was the butcher, and he started quartering it, and my brother and I were the muscle, and we started putting it in game bags and putting. I had brought some cayenne pepper to keep the bugs off, and I got to tell you, it worked like a charm.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it kept the flies off, and so I would.
Did you Google that or something, or did you ask somebody for some? Or is it just an old trick that you've known? Like, where'd you hear that? Or where have you heard that trick?
You know, I'll be honest with you, Jeff. I mean, I feel like I consumed thousands of hours of elk hunting podcasts. And it was, you know, it was just on some random podcast. And so, again, that's, you know, I tried to earn a PhD in elk hunting. And that's, you know, again, why I tried to put it all in a course for people that, you know, that maybe don't have 1,000 hours to listen to podcasts. And so, yeah, the cayenne pepper was just something I had heard somewhere, and I, you know, we covered the quarters and everything in cayenne pepper. And, I had shot that bull, I think around 4 o'clock, and we didn't get back to camp until 2 a.m.
Yep, I've heard similar stories.
It was crazy. I mean, we put the meat in an area that, you know, knowing that we were in grizzly country, we put the meat in an area that was something that we could see when we came back to get it, because we were going to let it cool overnight, and we were just too exhausted to really carry anything else but our packs out. And then, and so we let it cool overnight, and then we went back the next day and did sort of the rest of the pack out. And that's the pack out story will probably be another hour story. And I won't tell you that, but it's, I would just say, you know, you really got to plan that. You really have to, if you want to, it's not a bad idea to try to hire somebody or put some, you know, reach out to some local guides to see if they would be available. And they may, I don't know if there's like some sort of, holding fee or something like that, but to have someone else pack it out would have been such a great thing, because it was a miserable experience packing it out.
Right. And that's, I've heard, obviously, you know, I've never done it myself, but I've heard my dad always says, my dad has been hunting a lot, many years of his life, and he says, once you make the shot or make the kill, then the work begins.
Yeah, so, I mean, we didn't take enough water, and so we were, you know, as we were hauling our butts into camp at 2 a.m., we had been without water for, you know, probably 3 or 4 hours.
Wow.
And Yeah, we were really, really dehydrated. We were in rough shape, and that was a big mistake that we had made. It's funny. My dad had packed a life straw, and I told him, I was like, Dad, you don't need to pack that dumb thing. You know, it's just extra weight. And, you know, we all had water filters and all of that. It seemed like a bad idea at the time. But when we got down to a particular point, there was a stream. My dad pulled that life straw out, and we drank just as much water as we could drink. I even said at the time, I was like, okay, you know, shame on me. I was wrong. That came in handy, you know.
Well, that's really cool. Congratulations on the elk. That's on your first elk trip to get a bull elk. That's pretty awesome.
You know, it was. It was a great experience. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, Jeff, I could go out, you know, 10 more times and maybe not ever even see an elk during those 10 times. So, you know, blind luck certainly plays a role, I think, in any type of hunting, but certainly, you know, elk hunting. But, you know, I think, you know, preparation for anything. I mean, we talk about gear, you know, and technical hunting gear and can't, you know, technical clothing like, you know, merino this and synthetic that. And we talk about different types of bows and arrows. And certainly those things are really, really important. But I think, you know, what the greatest weapon that we have is the preparation and what's sort of between our ears. And that can make all the difference in the world. And so, you know, I just encourage, you know, anybody that's interested in this, whether it's hunting turkeys in your backyard or hunting whitetail or hunting elk or whatever, it's just preparation is just critical because it really can make or break the experience. And, you know, thankfully there's enough content out there these days that can really help folks that have never done it really, you know, go out there and have a really positive experience. You know, and honestly, even if we had just heard the bugles, like I talked about on day one, or seen a few elk, it would have been a success. And I think that's the other piece is to have the set the right expectations, because you don't want to say, yeah, we're going to go and we're going to absolutely kill, you know, a bull elk or a cow or, you know, 6x6 or whatever, because you're only going to be frustrated if that doesn't happen. So, right. Yeah, it really was life-changing. Jeff, I'm super jealous of you. I'll be honest with you. I wish I lived in a Western state, because, it's just such beautiful country, and the opportunities to chase, you know, elk or mule deer or, you know, whatever it is, it's so plentiful out there. I'm really, really jealous.
It is nice being out here. There's so close to wildlife, so close to mountains, and you know, it's where I live specifically. We can go an hour in any direction, and we're in the mountains pretty much. The only way it's not is would be directly west of us, but I mean, within reasonable driving distance. Like where I went hunting, actually. I mean, I don't mean to brag or anything like that, but where I went hunting this year, it was only an hour and a half from my house, and so it's definitely nice to be out here. And I, for those that have like you, to make the big trip out here to last 7 to 10 days in an area that you're, you know, the only thing you've probably seen is either a Google map or an Onyx map or you know, any type of trail like that, and then to go and pitch a tent for 10 days. I mean, that's an accomplishment all in itself, if you ask me. So for all those that are coming from the east and come out west, I mean, that's pretty ballsy, I'll be honest.
It's you know, it we have these we tried to take as many pictures as possible, and there's a picture I made a photo book of all these pictures that we have, and gave it to my dad and my brother for Christmas. And you know, there's not a day that goes by where I don't think about Montana, and I don't think about those experiences. And there's a picture of my dad, you know, at the top of this mountain where we were on day one, and in the backdrop you see all these other, you know, mountains and clouds, you know, it's just you know, I'm so happy that my brother and I were able to do that with him, because I think, you know, for me and for my dad and maybe less so for my brother, but I think we had all sort of thought about those sort of things, but thought we could never really do that stuff. You know, we're, you know, or that's such a, you know, such a distant, you know, thought. And, you know, so for my dad in his 60s, you know, to gut it out and to push himself beyond his physical limits, you know, I think, it was really commendable and a real accomplishment in and of itself. To your point, just coming out there and just camping, you know, I was so impressed and so inspired by my dad, because he really had a personal trainer. And, you know, I know you know, you're affiliated sort of with a group that's focusing on, you know, elevating your fitness level for these types of experiences. And that's, you know, that's what my dad did. And it was really inspirational.
Wow. Well, congratulations to all three of you making the big trip. And then that's amazing that you got a nice bowl on your first trip. That's really cool. I'm still waiting for my first bowl. I still got, you know, I'm putting in for the Idaho draw odds are in, or the tags go out in, I want to say May. And I won't see the results till July, I believe. So we're putting in for our bowl then, for a rifle hunt, but then also just have our general archery season hunt. And yeah, hopefully this year I can make it happen.
Well, even if you don't, you know, I'm still, you're still rubbing it in my face right now. And I'm really upset at you. you know, you really, it cuts deep when you say, oh, you know, an hour and a half from my house, you know, that cuts deep.
Yeah, well, you just got to come out here. You just got to come out. Idaho is growing so fast right now, actually. There's particularly Western Idaho, but Idaho is one of the fastest growing states in the nation right now. So there's room.
I hear you, man. Well, I'll have to make it out there sometime for sure.
Well, Jacob, I really appreciate you joining us today. And I want to, can you give us a quick shout out about your quick summary of where people can find your online course?
Yeah. So Udemy.com is the largest platform for online courses. And there's, I was really intentional about putting them on Udemy, because if you go to Udemy, there's a lot of stuff on computers and different IT related classes and
yeah, I was actually looking up, I was just looking through the courses, and I do a lot of Excel at work, and I was, yeah, just for fun, I looked up Excel. There was one teacher that had like 45,000 reviews. I was astonished of how many people had gone through, had used his course. I mean,
that's incredible. I'm just a little bit behind him. I'm just a little bit behind him.
I was astonished at how many people had gone for Excel. The same thing I did was look for Excel on there. I thought it was very interesting.
Yeah. So if your listeners go to Udemy.com, they can type in 12 months to elk or elk. I've got Whitetail 101 and Turkey 101, And Whitetail 101 and Turkey 101 are really designed for someone, for anybody that's really new to trying to hunt, you know, that species, or maybe they've hunted a couple times and trying to put it all together. I really try to look at the setup and the types and the priorities during the course of the season for those types of animals. And, you know, there's different tactics. I mean, some people hunt, you know, feeding areas. Some people try to get in close to buck bedding. Some people hunt out of blinds or tree stands or whatever. And so it truly is 101. The courses are there. Once you enroll, it's yours forever. It doesn't expire. So if you do a little bit now and a little bit later, but that being said, you know, I'd love for the listeners to check out the courses. There's actually some free content on there too that they can to see if it's, you know, if it's really right for them or not. And then, but you know, if your listeners want to find me on Instagram, it's Jacob M. Coons. It's COONS. And if they just want to send me questions about any of this stuff, whether it's elk or whitetail or turkey, I mean, those are three areas that I feel really confident that I can give them a really good answer and help them with. Whether they get the courses or not, you know, the courses are intended just to help people, and I can certainly answer any questions that people have that they send, you know, through Instagram.
All right. Well, perfect. Like I said, I checked out the course. I didn't get to go through all of it, but it's very insightful. It's very helpful. I like how you've structured it from, you know, basically a year in advance to like 12 months before your first day of hunting. I think that's a good way to do it. And you also said macro to micro. But the way you present the information is very easy to understand. I like how you break it down by state. That really helps, because each state is different depending on how you draw for tags. Jacob said, listeners, go to udemy.com, and it's 12 months to elk, right? Is that the title of it?
Yeah, that's the elk course, and then whitetail 101, and then turkey hunting 101. And Jeff, one of the other things, and I'll just mention this very quickly, there's a social media app called Go Wild.
Yes.
And, you know, it's actually, I had a chance to meet some of the folks there. They're actually located here out of Louisville. And I just...
Is that Brad Luttrell?
Yeah. And I'll be honest with you, Instagram is coming, you know, a lot of social media sites are coming down hard on Hunter. Or, you know, they view, you know, like me with a picture of my elk, they might view that as categorized that as violent.
Right.
And so I'm on Go Wild as well. And I just want to put that out there. If your listeners are interested in not so crazy about Instagram, Go Wild is another avenue that's really designed for people in the outdoors. It's not just hunting and fishing, but it's other outdoors activities as well.
Right. And I've actually connected with quite a few people on Go Wild, and it's I've had great responses from it. It's been a great place for me to actually broadcast my podcast and connect with other hunters. So I endorse it all I can. I've actually, one of the guys that I connected on there, he's been featured on one of my episodes. He's actually in Ireland, and he can't hunt in Ireland. So next year, this coming season, he's actually making a trip out here. I think he's making his way to Kentucky, I believe. Kentucky or Iowa, I don't remember. And he's going to hunt with somebody he connected with on Go Wild. So that's a fantastic app.
There you go. Yeah, let's we got to quit plugging Instagram. We got to start plugging apps that are built for us, right?
Exactly. All right, Jacob. Well, like I said, it's been great talking to you, and we'll be following you on Instagram and Go Wild. And are you going to make another trip out west this year, or is that the following year? Are you going to try to make it an annual thing, or what's the plan?
Yeah, you know, Jeff, we're going to Yellowstone this year as a family. I won't be hunting, unfortunately, but I will be able to get out west, and I'm trying to get it in my kids' blood, that mountain air and sort of that interest in being out west, so that, as I mentioned earlier, when they build up enough points to hunt an elk hunt in Arizona, it'll be something that really is interesting to them. So it'll probably be in 2020 when I head back out west, and I'm going to try to take my daughter, who will be 14, maybe pronghorn or maybe elk hunting. So it'll be 2020 when I get back out there.
Cool. Well, Jacob, let me know when you head out here and we'll meet up. I mean, I'm only an hour and a half away from Yellowstone, so 2 hours.
Oh, okay.
2 hours from Yellowstone, right. But let me know.
I will. Well, Jeff, thank you again for your podcast, and I appreciate the time.
Oh, of course. We'll talk to you later, Jacob.
All right. Bye.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. Jacob, I wish you the best of luck. I hope you come out west again. You said you were going to head to put in for Arizona with your try to get some points for you and your children. I wish you luck. You said you were coming back west in a big Yellowstone trip. Maybe we can meet up. Let's try to make it happen. All right, everyone. Remember, the giveaway starts January 23rd, 2019, and goes through March 15th, 2019. Send me your funny story to thenovicehunter@gmail.com. I can't wait to hear your story, guys. It'll be great to connect with all of you. Like and share this podcast. Share it on your Insta stories. Share it on Facebook, wherever you can. This is going to be a great giveaway. We're having some great sponsors here, from obviously Jacob and his online courses. We have Built for the Hunt, and we also have I bought a cool sheath knife to put into the giveaway. So I want to hear from you guys. Let me hear. Remember, subscribe, give me a rating, and if you want to support the podcast, click the link in the description. And all right, everyone. Great talking to Jacob. It's been fantastic. I hope to hear from you guys soon with funny emails. All right. Have a good one.